It is hard to believe that we are on the eve of week 6 in the NFL. Yeah, we're nearly into mid-October. Hoodies, pumpkins, pumpkin everything. Hot chocolate, hay rides, Halloween decorations. Boy, my neighborhood all of a sudden exploded in Halloween decorations. The chillier, cooler temps in parts of the country. I recognize not every part of the country, but I know in my neighborhood, it's been in the mid-40s the last 3 mornings. Penny is in heaven. This is our favorite time of year. It feels like football. It feels like chili. I love chili. This might be a weekend. Well, if I wasn't going to Atlanta, it would be a weekend when I would make some chili. Haven't had a frost yet, not a hard freeze yet. Thank goodness, because I still have grass seed to plant. But it feels like fall. It's one of the reasons I love the Northeast, why I love growing up in New England, because when it was football season, you got into it a little bit. The temp started to match. So this is my favorite time of the year, and it's starting to get serious in not just Major League Baseball, of course. We're down to just one division series still ongoing. Baseball's got to be fit to be tied. Rob Manfred's got to be annoyed. Stop it. Stop doing this. Don't you know this does not go according to the plan? Well, at least you got your short games all season. I guess you can hang your hat on that. We will get back to Major League Baseball. I'm enjoying your responses to the question of what impresses you more. 5 consecutive AFC championship games at home, like we've seen from the Kansas City Chiefs, or 7 straight appearances in the ALCS, the Astros extend their record? That question is on both Twitter, A-Law Radio, and Facebook, After Hours with Amy Lawrence. So we'll get back to baseball. We'll hear from the Astros. Oh, Justin Verlander leading the celebration in the clubhouse. I don't think he cares if anyone goes and repeats it to the other clubhouse. He's good. He's all right. He's back where he belongs or something like that.
He's his pitcher.
But we want to pivot a little bit because we're so excited to welcome back to the show one of our favorites. Haven't had him in a really long time. Maybe you'll recognize his voice. He's a football guy.
Mason is the running back. Purdy takes the snap, tosses it to Mason, running left, cuts it up along the numbers, finds a lane, and he's gone to the end zone. Touchdown, Jordan Mason. Touchdown, 49ers. A 26-yard touchdown run. You can turn out the lights here in Santa Clara. 41-10, 49ers.
Even as we march through the rest of the season, no one's likely to forget the statement by the Niners week 5 against the Cowboys, your choice for game of the week. Boy, it was gaudy, but it was impressive. And so we welcome from Seattle, from the Pacific Northwest, Randy Mueller, who's a longtime NFL GM and front office executive, now with The Athletic, has the Football GM Pod. We're about to kick off week 6, Randy, which is kind of crazy. At this point, what type of measuring sticks or gauges might you use for a team? We've seen a ton of inconsistency, always do early in the year. So what are you looking for now?
As a GM, you're kind of looking to what identifies with your team. What is your identity on either side of the ball? I think that's the big thing. And sometimes that takes 6-7 weeks. I think it's great that a few years back, the NFL moved the trade deadline back. It used to be 6 weeks forever. Now it's after week 8. I always thought, I don't even know my team yet before 4 or 5 weeks. So they're asking us to make deals before, you know, week 6. It's just impossible. And for that reason, there's a lot more trades now, and there seems like a lot more willingness to make moves to fill maybe some injury voids or really to look forward for the last half of the season. So I think moving the trade deadline back is a really good thing. And that helps you when I say you identify what you have. You know your weaknesses and strengths by the time that trade deadline comes around.
We've had a bunch of teams in the last couple weeks get their first wins, right? Weirdly enough, 2 weekends ago, we had all 4 winless teams facing each other. And so 2 of them were bound to get their wins. Finally, you've been scuffling. It's not working. Maybe you're coming up short by just a tad. Like the Vikings, all their losses have come by such slim margins. What does it feel like to finally get your first win to start a season?
Well, I'll tell you what, it is hard, and you work hard to get it, and I think people fail to realize sometimes how good the other teams are in the league. We don't get to play a homecoming game against the, you know, team that hasn't won in years. We don't get that. In the NFL, it's hard to come by. I guess the team that jumps out to me as probably felt the best that week was the Chicago Bears, because they had lost, 14 in a row, something like that. That gets taxing. That is heavy on your shoulders. I've been there. We had a long losing streak when I was in Miami as their GM my last year, and it takes the toll on everybody involved. Players, coaches, families, kids, everybody sees it when you lose that many games. When you get to have double-digit losses in a row, that's hard. So I was probably happiest for Chicago, but it is a big relief. There's no doubt. No matter what they say, it's a relief.
In the middle of a season, what would it take for you to change coaches or even get rid of coordinators and replace them?
Yeah, it seems like that happens more often, Amy. Back when I was a GM, I never believed in that. I think you have to always ask tough questions. You have to have the awkward conversations, sometimes with coaches. And you maybe have to be willing to tweak and just be honest about where we're at. I think you see the short leash of patience nowadays, but that's society. And that kind of ticked over into the NFL. Everybody wants changes. Everybody wants it to happen overnight. But I do think in a lot of NFL places, they don't ask the tough questions. And I think it comes from ownership to start with, to be honest with you. You've got to have owners that are involved, that really care. And I always felt like I did my best work when the owner was holding me accountable, was asking me the right questions or any questions. I had to be prepared every day for that. So I think it's the environment, the ownership, you feed off of them, and I think it makes us all better, and that's the goal. But I don't think change overnight or change because the media asked for it or change because the fans are screaming at the offensive coordinator for the last month, I don't think that doesn't warrant change necessarily. You know internally what the issues are, and if you can't get them fixed in ample amount of time, then obviously change happens.
We're so excited to have Randy Mueller back on the show. It's been too long. Gosh, not sure how that happened, but we always appreciate his insight. He's a longtime NFL GM and front office executive, now with The Athletic and has the Football GM Pod. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. The San Francisco 49ers right now, most consistent, one of the undefeateds. And I have been trying to get an answer to this question, so I'm going to throw it out for you, Randy, and you tell me what you think. How did so many teams miss on Brock Purdy, and all of them did, to the point where he was still there, the last pick of the NFL draft?
You know, if I had to explain it, Amy, I would say it's the hardest part of the skill set to evaluate when you're looking at quarterbacks. It's the ability to process and what makes you tick inside. I think the reason teams didn't draft him earlier is, you know, he's not 6'4". He doesn't weigh 230. He doesn't run 4.65 in a 40. So those special physical traits aren't as evident, but he has the accuracy, he has timing, he has anticipation. The same reason that some of these great quarterbacks, and we know the one in New England that played there for 20 years, same thing, didn't get drafted high because of the physical aspects that are easiest to judge. But how players, what's inside them, and how they process information and how timely they process it, I think that's what separates them, and it's not an exact science when you evaluate players, and we find it out every year with many guys who get drafted late and become stars sooner than anybody ever expected.
Other than Brock, what impresses you about the Niners' start?
Well, I think their defense is dominating. We saw it against Dallas the other night. I mean, they held Dallas to 8 first downs. Dallas had 9 plays inside the 49ers' side of the 50. That's crazy.
Right.
You just don't see that in the NFL. And I like them on all three levels. I think the 49ers' pass rush, we know about it. I think their linebackers are as good as there are in football now. They just don't seem to have a weakness, really, on either side of the ball. So I'm with you. I think they're the class of the NFL right now. But I really like their defense and the way they can do things to affect, really, from a physical standpoint, what offenses are trying to do to them.
When you see what the Niners defense was able to do against the Cowboys, kind of reminds people that Dallas has been inconsistent, not just to start this year, but through the tenure of Dak Prescott as a quarterback. There are always high expectations. At times, he can look like the best of the best. And then against the Niners, that offense, it stalled. It went nowhere. It seems so unproductive. What do you see with Dak Prescott and with the Cowboys, even as they made some changes this year in terms of their play calling in the offense?
This has been, like you said, throughout his tenure, maybe even a little bit before, they really struggle hand in prosperity, in my opinion, Amy. They get on a roll. They all of a sudden kind of feel themselves as being this and hear everything that's being said good about them. And then there's the deflating of the balloons. And they either look really bad in a game like they did against the 49ers, or they lose to a team that they should beat, like Arizona, you know, or somebody like that. So they just can't stand prosperity for whatever reason. I think with regarding Dak, his inconsistencies has to be considered. And I know Jerry Jones has said he wants him to be his quarterback forever. I get it. Nobody likes to forecast change, especially at that position. But the amount of money they're going to have to pay for an extension, I think, is you know, almost problematic, especially if you're going to get these kind of results. It's been up and down. I think the biggest thing I see when I look at Dak is he's not quite as athletic as he was a couple years ago. He's not extending plays when he was at the peak of his career. And then he's just not seeing the whole field. And we had the same conversation a year and a half ago when he hurt himself, when he had the leg injury and came back, and he was really rusty and it looked cloudy. His vision didn't seem to be right. And I think we're seeing a little bit of that now, especially in big games. People seem to kind of throw curveballs at him, and by the time he figures it out, it's too late. So I love Dak's intangibles. I love everything about him as a person, as a player. It's just not, you know, I don't know that it's a lot above average right now. And I think the Cowboys have to consider, what are we going to do contract-wise? Like I say, he's obviously the fair-haired boy and somebody that Jerry loves. I just don't know how they go about constructing a contract of $40 million for this kind of performance.
So that's the Dak question, but going back to what you said about the Cowboys not being great front runners, how do you fix that inside of a locker room?
Well, I think, and I know Mike McCarthy well. Mike was our offensive coordinator in New Orleans when I was the GM there. And I think his personality is such that he doesn't get satisfied easy. I think it's just a mindset. You have to keep grinding on guys. You have to keep coaching them hard. And I think sometimes, you know, when they can bypass the coach and go right to the GM/owner, that's not always good. I don't know that they get the, and I'm not saying beat them down, but you've got to coach them hard. You've got to hold them accountable. You've got to reel them in constantly. And that's an organizational job, not just the head coach. So somehow that'll change at some point. I don't know. It seems like it's been, like you said, over the last several years that they struggle. They struggle when they win.
Randy Mueller is with us from the Pacific Northwest, makes his home in Seattle now, spent some time with the Seahawks, the Saints, the Dolphins, former NFL Executive of the Year. It's After Hours here on CBS Sports Radio. There are many sports talk radio shows debating, but if you're the New York Jets, do you go out and get a different quarterback? The name Kirk Cousins right now is floating around, Randy. Yes. What would you be doing?
I think they're on the right course right now, and that may sound crazy. I understand Jets fans and their frustrations with Zach Wilson. I've thought all along, if they could change the offense slightly to do some things that he does best, and I think Nathaniel Hackett has finally done that the last couple of weeks, and I think that's why we see the progress. I think they're headed in the right direction with Zach, and I think doesn't mean that they couldn't still look for a veteran that upgrades them over what they have. But I think if the defense continues to play good, and I think the pressure is really as much on them, they've got to find ways to play better. We've talked about how great the Jets' defense is in the past. I haven't seen it. So they need to stand up and actually play good instead of just having people talk about them. And you've seen some of that. So I think Zach is fine for what they have right now. And I like Zach coming out. So I understood where his skill set was, but I always thought that they needed to tailor make some things to fit that skill set. And I think they've done that the last couple of weeks.
In that same division, a lot of consternation around the Patriots. There's rumblings of Bob Kraft finding a way to let Belichick go, which would have been unheard of even 3-4 years ago. I mean, that's sacrilegious, right? But Mac Jones has been benched 2 weeks in a row. Where do you start trying to fix that mess, Randy?
Well, I don't know that it can be fixed this year because I see a pretty big gap with talent compared to the better teams in the league, and I think that's where it starts. And I guess to identify that problem, it's probably the said that Bill Belichick, the GM, might not be helping Bill Belichick, the head coach, as much as we would hope, and as he has in the past. So that's an issue. I don't see the talent really on either side of the ball. They're kind of slow on the perimeter. Their offensive line has been shaky. I don't know that the guys they brought in there, we can just say, and they've drafted four young offensive linemen the last couple of years, and their take has always been, we'll get them to play better. I think that's pie in the sky. I just don't see them improving like that. So they've got to make some changes personnel-wise. And as you know, Amy, you can't do that during the season. That's an off-season task. And I thought Bill said it best, and it may have been an indictment of himself. After the game the other day, he said, we need to start over. Well, I get it, and I agree. It's probably a rebuild, but that doesn't say a lot for the guys who built this team, and that's the same guys that are there.
Randy Mueller with us here after hours, CBS Sports Radio, another team that you spent time with, the Dolphins. They've not had a playoff win in over 20 years. They've made the playoffs a couple of times, but not a win since the turn of the century. We've seen this team hang 70 on the Denver Broncos. They can get up and down the field. They seriously look like they're having a blast. What do you see with the Dolphins?
I see a surgical execution, and I know they get a lot of run because of the athleticism and speed and the explosiveness. I get it. But I think the thing people fail to see with them, because of the bright, shiny objects they have, the way that they block, the pad level and the execution of their running game, when you run for as many yards as they have, and it's a ton, it's just not easy to describe what they do. But I think, and Mike McDaniels was kind of labeled this when he came there as being a run game guru. Well, you still see that. You see simplistic type, old school fullback, two tight ends, some power plays, some quarterback counters and things like that. It's old school, but they execute it at such a high level that that's to me what makes them tick. And yeah, it helps when you can get 80-yard touchdown from your receivers about any time you want. But I think that's the unnoticed part of them, is how structurally sound they are from a technique, especially in the running game standpoint.
Well, they may be technically sound, but the flashy and the gaudy and the speed and the big numbers, all of that right now is capturing attention. And the Dolphins aren't the only team, Randy, that are making some noise after a long stretch where their fans have suffered. We, of course, have to talk about the Detroit Lions. But first, a break. Hang with us. Randy Mueller joining us from Seattle, longtime NFL general manager and front office executive with The Athletic now, has the Football GM pod. Got a few more questions, so hang out. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence, CBS Sports Radio.
You are listening to the After Hours podcast.
Goff takes the snap, fakes the give, looks, throws end zone, caught. Does he get both feet down? He did. Touchdown, Detroit Lions.
I believe we can compete with anybody and beat anybody in this league. It's the ones you don't see coming, and they know exactly who's coming.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Dan Miller on Lions Radio, and Dan Campbell himself. The Lions have not been the same since he was made head coach of the franchise. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Last segment, Ryan Radke on Westwood. Want to make sure I include him calling that Niners game on Sunday night against the Cowboys. We're spending a few more minutes with our favorite general manager, former executive of the year in the NFL, Randy Mueller, who spent time with half dozen different clubs and now joins us from the Seattle area. Dolphins deserve a ton of credit. They're out of the gate fast. It's been a long time for that fan base, but same thing applies to the Lions. And Dan Campbell has been a catalyst. He has changed things in the Motor City. What about this head coach has been so good for the Lions?
Well, I think his identity clearly is how this team is built and how it plays now. And the job him and Brad Holmes have done in kind of changing the whole focus on the kind of players they're looking for. Hey, they've let a couple good players go, but maybe they just weren't their kind of players. And I love that about Dan, but he's only as good as his assistant coaches as well. And Ben Johnson's been awesome on offense. We know that.
Yes.
The part of it that's really surprising to me is the defense, because as we sit here now, a year ago, their defense was a mess. And it was run by Aaron Glenn. There was questions about the scheme. There were a lot of things that nobody really knew about. It's come full circle now to be one of the better defenses in the league. And I don't know that Aiden Hutchinson can be credited with everything, but he can go a long ways toward it. But they're playing good at all levels, too. And there's something to be said for playing hard, playing sound football, and that's what they're doing on defense. That's been the biggest surprise to me.
Okay, you're going to laugh at me, and that is okay. I welcome laughter. I have thrown Jared Goff out there as an early dark horse MVP candidate. I know, Randy, I know.
Hey, I'm with you. I think, and again, it just didn't start this year. He had a really good year last year. So I think you're not alone in that, putting him at least in the conversation. So much to the point where I think, and they drafted a kid from Tennessee this year, Hendon Hooker, a quarterback who is on injured and won't play this year, but they drafted him, I believe, in the third round. I think Goff has played so much that Hooker might be trade bait for someplace else now. And that's, you know, because I see an extension on the horizon for Jared Goff, and nobody would have thought that 2 years ago. So he's upped his game. Again, a great scheme for him. The OC has made it fit and made it work. And I think they've got a lot of things now. If they can minimize some of that change, and changing quarterbacks now would not be recommended in any way, and especially the way Goff's playing, I don't think your projection is outlandish at all, Amy. I wouldn't laugh at that. I'd stick to your guns.
Certainly helpful in the NFC North when you have a run game, and they finally have got that in David Montgomery, who obviously was in the North before the Lions. So interesting the way that things play out sometimes. All right, I have to ask you this question, Randy, because we're seeing the NFL more and more send its product overseas. It's not just about a couple of games now in London. It's Germany as well. There's a series. The Jags actually stay over there for more than a week to play two games. As an NFL GM or a front office exec, when you find out that you're a team that's going to London, what's your reaction?
I think we all thought it was awesome when it started. I know we took the Dolphin team over there and played the first regular season game. I forget the year. We played the Giants the first year they won the Super Bowl. It was exciting. It was really cool. And I think it's still that. But I think the art of travel makes all the difference in the world. And you mentioned Jacksonville got to go and stay 2 weeks now. That's the first time the league has done that. Guess what? They won both games. And I think this week against Buffalo, the prime, you know, reason they won is because they were there. They were fresh. They were more energetic. They were more athletic. Buffalo traveled after a Thursday practice and showed up Friday morning. Just didn't have their legs in them. So I love the idea of these games being over there. I think teams are going to figure out different ways to deal with the travel. And maybe it's just me, Amy, but I think London eventually is going to have a team.
What?
And I just think it makes sense from a revenue standpoint to take it to a city, really a country. You can even call it all Great Britain. They're going to end up really having a big slice of the NFL pie from a revenue standpoint. And let's face it, we all know that that's what the NFL is about. It's about making money. I don't know how they'll do it yet, but I wouldn't be opposed to it. I've thought all along, you can make the logistics work. And so I just think this Jacksonville being there the last 2 weeks checked a lot of boxes, I should say, for the league, in that this could happen logistically. It's not far-fetched.
All right, at some point we'll talk about that because that would be intriguing. But Randy, before I let you go, I can think of a few surprises that jump out at me in the first 5 weeks. What are a couple of surprises? Maybe you didn't see them coming in this first month.
I surely, on the negative part, didn't see the Giants struggling like they are. I thought they had made pretty good progress. Not only are they struggling offensively, but they're struggling defensively too. So that one got me a little bit. And I know the Steelers are in first place, but I thought they would be better than they are. I thought they would be a well-oiled machine more so, especially on defense. So there's a couple teams that have let me down, and maybe Pittsburgh will find a way to keep it going. I don't know. On the other end of it, I guess you'd have thought the Colts would be a little better. They're struggling, obviously, with a rookie quarterback. That's hard. I see more surprises of letdowns than, hey, all of a sudden this team is great. This is one of the teams. I thought Jacksonville would be good. They're finally coming around to that, so I can't say that they're surprising. And I think they'll be a playoff team before it's said and done. So maybe them now trending a little bit, you know, north, I think they could end up being one of the better AFC teams by the time the season's over.
Well, and how about Baker Mayfield with a resurgence in Tampa Bay? And I know it's not just him. The defense is really good, and the division's wide open. But, gosh, that might be one of the funnier storylines to start the season.
Well, you got to love Baker. His personality, the way he comes across. See, the teammates like him. There's no doubt about that. And Todd Bowles is always going to have a good defense.
Yes.
To get a win like they did the other day in New Orleans is giant. We'll see if it holds up over the long run. I still probably see New Orleans as being the team to beat, but you're right, it sure is wide open.
Good stuff. We're about to kick off week 6, which kind of blows me away, but it goes fast once you get into the season. So find Randy Mueller on Twitter at @RandyMueller_. Former NFL Executive of the Year, GM experience also in many different front offices, and we love his insight. You can hear it, actually, the Football GM Pod with The Athletic. Make sure you catch the stuff that he writes to there. So Randy, we appreciate a couple of minutes. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Amy. Great to catch up.
Always love talking to Randy because he doesn't hold back. And the fact that he's not working in the NFL anymore means that he can be open about things like the London trips. And I'm stunned to hear him say that he believes a franchise will end up there. I know that's the chatter. To me, though, the logistics make zero sense. But that's what he believes, and he's still very connected. The Football GM Pod, good stuff with him. And, man, it's been way too long since we've had Randy on the show. All right, more to do in the baseball space. And, obviously, yes, we have to get ready for week 6 in the NFL. Raise your hand, because I know there are so many of you that are geeked up about Chiefs Broncos on Amazon Prime. Last week, my Amazon Prime was crap. It kept buffering. I would, especially in the second half, I'd get a play and then a buffer and then a play and then a buffer. It was really annoying. Maybe it was my TV, but I don't think so. And between the buffering and the internet and a game between the Chiefs and Broncos, nah. I mean, I'll watch it because I have to. But if I didn't get paid to watch football on Thursday night, I think I might accidentally miss it. Whoopsie.
Yeah, I would still watch even if I didn't have to. Though I will admit, the old man that I am, I don't like all of the app stuff simply because it's too much of a pain in the ass to change off of it.
Yes, it is.
So you wind up sitting through the entire thing, even though you want to change the channel. Normally, for 3 seconds, it come right back. It takes too damn long to do it, so you don't. So you're almost angry and yell, like, in your mind. You're almost aggravated and frustrated, like, nothing's going to happen right now, even though I want to change the channel. Nothing's going to, like, you're just annoyed. I find myself more annoyed when I watch it than I should be.
Jay, should we tell him our secret?
It's a good secret. It's worked for me a little better.
It is. We decided about week 3 of last year, same thing. Especially in October when we've got playoff baseball and other things to watch, we can't just stay in one app. So Jay and I have now started doing we're nerds. We started doing the two screens. I've got my laptop. He uses his laptop. We watch the football game on the laptop, which generally tends to be a better stream. I'm not sure why, but I don't get the buffering on the laptop. Laptop and then baseball on the TV. And that way we can flip in and out of commercials pretty easily.
Yeah, there's two issues with that. Most of the time I'm here, I have one TV screen. Yes. I don't have the choices to be flipping into anything.
Well, then you're not sitting around and really staring at the screen anyway.
No, but I mean, to try to watch the game. If I am home, then I've got 3 children around. The last thing I need to show them is that there's another screen that we could watch TV off of. So I can't be doing any of that
no
stuff.
No hiding in the closet?
I do have a laptop that's capable, which is new for the Belletti household, that's capable of putting an app on there, but I won't do that simply because I don't need my 9-year-old to realize, oh man, I can watch this stuff on here. Like, no, you can't.
Wow.
No. I want him to stay, you know, dumb for a little bit longer until he figures it out on his own. He'll figure it out on his own faster. I probably already know, and I don't realize, but I don't want to do that. I don't want to open up Pandora's box. There's enough stuff that I'm trying to hold off as they get older. I don't need to do that too.
I was hearing this study, the results of a study that were done recently on young teenagers and social media. And I know this is not social media, but it is apps and it is screen time. And there's a direct correlation, as they're finding out with this extensive study, not a surprise. The more time that young kids spend on social media, the more likely they are that the percentage increase in anxiety and depression and everything else from burying. And social media is part of it. That's an app. But just in general, screen time and what you come across on the internet, it's actually kind of scary. I think we'll look back on it. And this Gen Z is much more marked by anxiety, and a lot of people will trace it back to the pandemic, which is part of it, but also the amount of time that young kids spend staring at social media, looking at apps on their phone, it's not great for the human brain.
It's not. It's basically, it took all the things that it makes us, we all struggle when we're growing up. We all go through all the things that we go through. Every one of us is not, no one escapes that.
Of course, me.
And social media has now put a big giant magnifying glass on that. So it not allows you to not only think about the stuff that you go through and what your family and your friends go through, mm-hmm. and on a small scale, now you see it all over the place, and it makes you feel even more insecure, even more that you're questioning yourself. So all the things that we all went through, they now do it, and it's magnified throughout everything. It seems like everything that they go through is 100 times worse than the rest of us had it when we were a little older. So yeah, it's going to lead to all kinds of issues. How do you get around it? Hell if I know. I wish I knew. I don't have the answer to that, but it's pretty obvious as to why so many kids are struggling as much as they are. It's easier. It makes sense when you look at it from all the stuff that you had to go through. Just think back to your own childhood. Imagine if you saw what they're seeing on top of it. I don't know how I would have been able to get through it.
Yeah, it's tough. I do know that my fourth and fifth graders that I teach in church, some of them have phones already. They're not allowed to use them when they bring them on Sunday mornings, but there are a few that don't have phones at all.
I got a fourth grader. Talk about phones. Get out of here.
Yeah, right. No, fourth and fifth graders who have phones. And it's crazy. It's crazy to think about what they might be doing with those phones, but also what do they need the phones for? They don't. Some of them are latchkey kids, so they maybe need to connect with their parents when they go get home in the afternoons. But yeah, that seems so early to me. So early to me. It scares me the amount of crap that you could encounter. But also, you know, we're a comparison. Well, not a generate. We're comparison people. Humans tend to compare themselves, mm-hmm. and social media is. It's fake, right? It's not
right.
reality.
But,
and so to compare yourself to what you see on social media, you can never measure up.
Right, but think about it. When you were 13 years old, you're insecure out of the dumbest things.
Oh, yes.
And you're now seeing stuff on social media that we know is fake.
Right.
But to a 13-year-old mind that's
exactly.
insecure to everything, all of that is all the things that I should be that I'm not.
Yeah.
And that's what's as difficult as it is. Because like I said, all of us went through it at that age, but we didn't have all of these things on top of it that magnify it, that make it more and more difficult. And it's nonstop.
It is.
It's just nonstop.
It never stops. The news feed just keeps going. The other part of this study that I heard on the news driving in is that because these services like Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, blah, blah, all the rest, they know how to target, right, with their advertising. They're actually collecting information from kids who are online, using that to target them with ads. And as you talk about, kids don't have that ability to delineate between, you know, something that is, well, is good for them versus not, but just the way they're being targeted. Like, we know that these apps and these companies are sharing information, they're coming at us, but kids don't necessarily have the filter mm-hmm. to be able to know that they're being targeted. And so it's also that too, like they want to try to put restrictions on social media and what they can sell and advertise to kids. It's a vast cesspool is what it is. It's really hard to regulate it. And I don't even know how we got on that, but, you know.
I don't either, but honestly, these are the things that keep me awake.
I can imagine.
Because I don't know what to do and how to navigate it for any of the kids. And I know I'm creeping up on it with the oldest now being 9 years old. We're right in that area. I know he does stuff online that I probably don't like, that some of it I let go, some of it I don't.
Right.
There are certain things that I don't allow that I know he hates. And it's just, there's a lot of it that I don't get, because as much as I played video games and stuff as a kid, I didn't have a video game that connected me with, you know, somebody from around the corner
right.
or from
across
somebody
the
around
world.
The world.
Yeah.
So like,
true.
You know, we played the computer if nobody was around. So they don't do that. So that's what's messing me up. Like, I don't care about video games. Like, now, you know, when I was a kid, you yelled at, that's going to rot your brain. Like, no, it doesn't. You can play video games all you want, but I can't get through the fact that, like, and he doesn't even have a system. He only has the iPad that he can play on. It's the idea that he's not just playing a computer. There are people on that.
Yeah.
That's hard for my brain to compute, because I'm like, oh, man, I got to pay attention to
who he's communicating with.
Yeah, and how do they communicate to him? And I'm always like, you don't talk to anybody. He's like, nobody wants to talk to me. And I'm like, I don't care. You're not talking to anybody. You know, but this is my friend from school. I don't care. I don't know who he is. Like, you know, because I can freak out because I don't know who anybody is. That's weird to me. And we're going to fight this battle each and every day.
Yes, of course. That's a challenge for parents now. On Twitter, A-Law Radio, our Facebook page, too. Thanks for hanging out with us. Let's see. Let's get back to baseball because the Dodgers are no more.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
High drive, deep right field, back at the warning track, back at the wall, touch them all. Geraldo Perdomo. 1-0 Diamondbacks here in the third.
You see a 1-0
and a high fly ball deep right field. No doubt about this. 2-0 Diamondbacks. Home run Marte. Third of the postseason. 2-0 Diamondbacks. As he came set, a drive to left. That ball might go. That ball's gone. How about this inning? Home run out, home run out, home run. 3-0 Diamondbacks. Walker's first of the postseason. Counts 2-2 on Moreno on the pitch from Lynn. And a shot to left center field. Back she goes. Are you kidding me? Gabby Moreno hits it out anyway, and it's 4-0 Diamondbacks. And Lance Lynn is just kind of staring out at center field.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
It happened so fast, and the Dodgers were unable to generate any type of real threat after the third inning and a postseason record 4 home runs by the Diamondbacks in that third inning, all of them solo shots. As I say, stunning, and it happened so fast. Perdomo, Marte, Walker, Moreno, Dodgers down, Diamondbacks still have not lost in this playoff run. Wow. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio, Greg Schulte on Diamondbacks Radio. Now, the Dodgers were able to put a couple runs on the board, but they did not get the hits or the production from the top of their order. So they had a couple of runs in the seventh, and this was on 2 outs. So RBI singles for a couple of guys toward the bottom of the lineup. And they were feeling a little bit of life, right? You could see them in their dugout. They're veterans. They understand that it's not over until the absolute last strikes and outs are recorded. And they had opportunities, so many opportunities. But Mookie Betts and Freddie Freeman, MVP candidates. This was astounding.
And the 2-2 and a swing and a miss. He got him with a slider. One down. Betts is 0 for 4 tonight. And now 0 for 11 in this series, one away. J.D. Martinez is on deck to hit next. The 1-2 pitch on the way. Swing and a miss. Freeman chased to the fastball at 98 out over the plate. He and Betts have struck out. 2 outs in the Dodger eighth inning.
How about striking those two guys out? What a clutch performance right now by Ginkle.
Yeah. The combined Mookie Betts and Freddie Freeman, 1 for 21 in this series. And sure, the pitching bears a ton of responsibility. Why? Well, Clayton Kershaw got blown up before he ever recorded a second out in his start to begin the series. That was in L.A. Bobby Miller didn't last very long either. Lance Lynn gives up 4 home runs. Ultimately, though, the result is the same. Congratulations to the Diamondbacks because they advanced to the NLCS for the first time since 2007. Torey Lovullo feeling it. By the way, his team, a lot of his team, out in the pool behind center field there at Chase Field.
It's almost indescribable. You know, here we are standing on a celebratory field, and there's been so much hard work that's gone into this. I am so grateful to be a part of this organization and to celebrate with these fans, to celebrate with this group, this ownership. I couldn't be more thrilled. And I haven't yet grasped how I'm feeling right now. I'm going to go in there. I'm going to go on a bender. I'm telling you. I might disappear for 24 hours. I know that. That's for sure. I might go underground for a little while.
Torey Lovullo reminds me a little bit of Mike Malone and just the way that they celebrate and just kind of, hey, got to be me, got to do me. So, yeah, his team is out there swimming in the pool after they sweep the Dodgers.
We're going to go in there. We're going to feel good about ourselves, and then we're going to go in there and hope there's a couple lifeguards out there to keep their eye on us. But I will tell you this. The last time we were here when we clinched, I was in the pool till 2 o'clock in the morning. So if you guys got these cameras, got these MLB cameras, you got to look out there in the middle of the night. You might see half the team in there.
Bring on either the Phillies or the Braves, but not until they have a chance to recover from their romp in the pool and the bender that Torrey Lovello is going on.
We're some greedy bastards, baby. We're some greedy bastards.
MLB Network with the interview. We'll hear from the Dodgers a little bit later, but yeah, the bats completely disappeared. And I was worried about the Braves and the Dodgers. I told you this 6 weeks ago that it did not bode well. I didn't think it was good for either of those teams to have buried their respective divisions with 6 weeks to go, to face no more pressure, no more games that matter, no more of that must-win pressure cooker stretch run baseball where they're fighting for something, because they weren't. They could lose 6 games in a row and wouldn't matter. Well, now it matters. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence, CBS Sports Radio.